Hello, my name is Danielle and I'm here in Cancun, Mexico. The official opening of the 2003 World Trade Organization is just days away. It's a very strange world to be reporting from. I spend my days behind police barricades in the very shadow of the convention center where the WTO will meet. There is a sense of worlds colliding. The convention center is surrounded by a 25-kilometer hotel zone, which is a shrine to club med-type holidays and commercialism. Thousands of official delegates from all over the world are coming towards this place to talk about issues regarding trade. They will sleep behind a protection zone. They will be served by the Mexican people who are driving the buses, working at the hotels, and providing the services. The reality of a vast difference in wealth between those who holiday here and those who work here is just one more reality that collides in Cancun. There are many voices from the civil society here. I thought I'd try and explain what it's like to be here and to explore some of the issues that bring so many concerned people to this meeting. If I could just describe Cancun to begin with. My guidebook says that in 1970, when Cancun was discovered by the Mexican Tourist Board, it was an inaccessible strip of barren land with beautiful beaches. The only road went straight past Cancun. Massive international investment and government sponsorship saw the luxury resort of Cancun completed within 25 years. The 25-kilometer hotel zone, set on a narrow strip of land in the shape of a number 7 alongside the coast, is an ultra-modern American-style boulevard with 5-star hotels, high-tech nightclubs, high-class shopping malls, and branches of McDonald's, Burger King, and Planet Hollywood. Enjoy or avoid. Getting on a local bus to travel up and down the strip to attend meetings is eye-opening. Huge hotels follow one after the other. In order to get into the convention center, you have to get what they call accreditation, which means you need a pass. So you need to pick up these passes from hotels along the strip. Traveling down to pick up my pass, I passed the most extravagant hotels I have ever personally seen. They all have tennis courts, massive pools, and hundreds of rooms, and they literally sprawl for about a kilometer each. They come in all sorts of shapes, with waterfalls built into the architecture, and surrounded by palm trees. On one side is the crystal blue ocean with white sand, and on the other is a lagoon fringed by mangroves. Altogether, they are overwhelming. Maintaining these hotels are the Mexican people. They come from all over Mexico looking for work, and they get paid tiny amounts of money. A tip of $1 after a meal here is considered a good tip. The hotels were built with their cheap labor. To gain a better understanding about what the situation is with the local Mexican people, I talked to Helen from Friends of the Earth. This morning, she went out with some international journalists to investigate just what is the reality for the people living around Cancun.
When you go outside of the hotel zone, it's just a completely different world out there. We went along to some fishing villages along the coast, and these are almost shanty villages, small fishing communities. Some of them have been moved along the coast because they were working in the tourist zone, and now they've been asked to leave and to move a little further down. There's 750,000 people in the city of Cancun, and the hotel zone produces as much rubbish as the city itself. And this rubbish is just taken out into the neighbouring municipality and dumped in a huge pile. It's dug into the earth. So it's the highest bit of ground in the Yucatan area, apparently, is this rubbish dump. There are vultures circulating overhead. You can see the filth, the water seeping out into the drains. And then around the edges, there are families living in little huts who are obviously reclaiming any waste, anything from the rubbish that they can actually get any money for. So it's a different world out there from the gloss of the hotels. One of the guys we spoke to who was running a restaurant on the beach, a small local restaurant on the beach, said that his children who were working the hotels, because they've been brought up to work in the hotels, they've learnt English and they've learnt to use computers, they'll be working as slaves essentially for the big multinational companies, because it's basic kind of the minimum wage kind of level.
A source of jobs at the moment is the erection of the security barricades that have been put in up around town. These wind like a labyrinth through Cancun. The barricades make sure that people can get to the shops, but they can't get to the convention centre. At night, when I leave the Greenpeace office, I see gangs of men, possibly as many as 30 at a time, coming off shift, having worked all day. They're being replaced by more men who work throughout the night. This is the reality that underpins Cancun. A more overt aspect of being in Cancun is the security. There are police everywhere, at every corner, at every checkpoint, around every bend, on all the barricades. Last night, I was walking around the convention centre checking it out, and I saw troop carriers for riot police, as well as police vans and lock-up wagons. To get into the convention centre, you actually have to cross bridges, which are only wide enough to fit two people. These bridges go from one side of the street to the other, and it depends on what kind of badge you're wearing to see which bridge you can use. This creates a kind of hierarchy. The official government delegates will get in without hassle, whenever they want. Press, like me, will probably be treated okay, but without the red carpet. People holding NGO cards will probably be the last on the list for consideration. What these bridges do, and what all the barricades do, is really remind you of a militarized zone. It really has an impact. I think it creates a climate of fear. You have to ask yourself, how legitimate is the WTO if it has to defend itself with force? And it's just so incongruous to see all this military presence and then see all the touristy Mexican restaurants with their huge plastic sombreros and cheesy advertising. There's a sense of the surreal as all these worlds collide. Why did they choose Cancun, the home of the Monster Hotel, to hold the WTO meetings for 2003? The answer is so simple. This place is easy to defend. It juts out into the sea like the handle of a teacup. On both sides of the road is water, and the strip of land itself is not that wide, with only one main road. After Seattle, the authorities went into overdrive. The WTO meeting in Doha was only allowing one person per NGO into the country. Not just a town, they denied people's visas into the country. Every meeting since Seattle has been about protection and control. Cancun is definitely being controlled. As the official WTO organising committee plants hundreds of flowers and lays down grass overnight, elsewhere, NGOs and what they're locally calling globalophobicos of every type are thinking about the next couple of days. I thought I'd ask a few people about why they've come to Cancun and what they've been doing here in the days before the meeting officially opens.
I'm Gerard Greenfield. I'm with the Greenpeace International Campaign on Genetic Engineering. I'm down at the Gimnasio y Casa de la Cultura, which is the major gathering point for the grassroots organizations from all around Mexico for this event in opposition to the WTO meeting in Cancun. And what's happened here is that people are coming in, the campesina, the peasant farmers are coming in from all over Mexico. They're arriving on buses, and they've been arriving since yesterday. And this is the build-up to the big farmers, the campesina rally on the 10th of September. And so this series of events here today is some speeches and hearing some stories from around the world. There are about 3,000 farmers and people from indigenous communities. The name of the forum is the International Farmers Forum, the International Campesino Forum, organized by Via Campesina. And the theme is food sovereignty and free trade. But it's pretty clear that from all the banners here and the headbands people are wearing, that this is a movement in the struggle for food sovereignty and that is threatened by the WTO and free trade. And what was very interesting was there's strong representation from small farmers organizations from other countries around the world, including South Africa and Thailand. And the farmer from Thailand gave a very emotional speech that was very well received, because he basically declared with in a message directed at Supachai, who's the Director General of the WTO, that Supachai, even though he is Thai, cannot represent Thai small farmers, and he cannot represent the Thai people, and therefore in Cancun he cannot represent the farmers and people of the world. And he said, basta, enough, and the WTO go to hell. And that was very well received. But the common theme that's coming out here, and that's very strong, and in this statement that is repeated throughout the meetings, with especially from the campesina from indigenous communities whose livelihoods are threatened, is the position is the WTO out of agriculture, no patents on life, and yes to food sovereignty.
I'm Phil Barriano. I'm here in Cancun, formerly representing a U.S. NGO called the Council for Responsible Genetics, which has been represented at previous WTO meetings. I do a lot of work on the issues of GMOs and genetic engineering in general, international negotiations and so on, involving, for example, the biosafety protocol and the U.N. agency called the Codex Alimentarius, which deals with international food rules. The issue of GMOs, while it's not the only important issue in regard to world trade issues, is certainly one which has established itself as being a difficult problem area. And so in a number of ways, including the patenting of life, the special provisions of the WTO, what are called the TRIPS agreements on intellectual property, and in other ways, the U.S. challenge to the EU under the WTO, the issue of genetic engineering technology and its relationship to world trade is a major issue. On the other hand, I'm here in Cancun not because I expect to be excited by anything that goes on in the convention center. Most of these issues are quite blocked in terms of the failure of the different parties to give any ground, to find any common ground. I'm not particularly unhappy about that because very often it would mean that the powerful countries would win out against the weak. The important things for me is what's going on outside. It has to do with networking with my colleagues, participating in teach-ins, mobilizing. We did something along these lines at the Seattle WTO meeting where we organized, the number of us, a teach-in on patents on no patents on life, and over 500 people got into the church for the hearing. They had to cross police lines, argue with cops to get in. And so it's really important to use the WTO as a venue for larger mobilizing, educational activities, networking and the like, outside the actual conference hall itself.
I'm Jürgen Knirsch from the German Greenpeace office, working there on trade issues. Yesterday evening I attended a press conference, which was organized by Greenpeace. And this press conference took place in a place called Cozumel. Perhaps I should say something about the relevance of this so-called high-level meeting. So Cozumel is a small island near of Cancun, and the Mexican government invited some ministers, only some, not all environment ministers, only a handful of ministers, have together a statement on several topics. And one of the topics is, or one issue is, this relationship between environmental agreements and trade rules. At the moment, we have these trade rules, and we have a lot of environmental agreement, and the relationship between both is unclear. But the WTO has a dispute settlement mechanism, and this is a force for them to put their rules through. So at the moment, trade rules are higher on the agenda than environmental agreements. And we think we must change this relationship. Therefore, we set yesterday evening a little press conference, invited a lot of ministers, which are now in Cozumel talking about this topic, on the relationship between trade rules and environmental agreements. And we asked five ministers to make a statement. We got statements from them, but I think it was a good event because now we confronted them with our position, which is that trade rules must respect environmental agreements and must do anything that environmental agreements can take place.
Hi, my name's Ronnie Hall, and I'm coordinating a team of international campaigners at the Cancun Ministerial.
And what are you doing here? Like, what are the issues that are on the table for the Friends of the Earth?
Well, in fact, there are a huge range of issues that are actually being negotiated here by trade negotiators, ranging from liberalisation of services, so issues relating to water and energy and tourism, negotiations concerning agriculture, concerning the environment. But we do have some overall concerns about the thrust of the negotiations, because we believe that they are actually to benefit the interests of large transnational companies that are scouring the world looking for new markets, and they are of no benefit at all to local communities, local businesses and the environment. Personally, I've been setting up the logistics for a large team of campaigners. We have about 40 people from around the world here. But today we've been out on a tour of the real Cancun, taking journalists, particularly journalists from Europe and the United States and Latin America, out to see how people in Cancun really live, the people who, most of them, work in the hotels, and the few that don't are reliant on subsistence farming and fishing.
What do you expect to see in the next couple of days?
I expect to see an extremely bitter fight between northern and southern countries over who is going to benefit from this process. And if previous rounds of trade negotiations are anything to go by, we can expect the US and the EU to use some particularly undemocratic processes to open up markets in the south.
Outside the hotel zone, which is the highly controlled zone around the convention centre, is downtown Cancun. It is here that I found the Eco Village, the Indie Media Centre and the Convergence Centre, all of which are focal points for the civil society. I decided to visit these places and see what they're all about.
So, I have on the phone here Evan, who is currently at the Indie Media Centre. Evan, can you tell us what it's like to be there?
The Indie Media Centre is a centre or hub of communication for social movements. So, during this protest and these counter-summits, Indie Media is the place where all the media activists from around the world come to coordinate their coverage. So people here are producing radio stations, radio programs, they're producing a documentary film, they're producing a newspaper that gets out to the streets, both to the protesters and the people of Cancun, and basically coordinating the communications aspect of social movements who are concerned about the issues of globalization and negotiations happening inside the WTO here in Cancun.
What can you see?
Well, we have a sort of a resort-type building. It's used by a local business to hold party functions, but has two large rooms which are, you know, painted with a Mexican flower motif on the ceiling and with large windows, and they are completely filled with desks and computers. We have internet connection, which is wired into all these desks and these computers, and they're covered with laptops and audio editing equipment and video editing desks and, you know, dozens of computers where people are writing out their stories and publishing them onto the internet. So it's a hectic, sort of frantic pace. A lot of people describe an Indie Media Center during a protest as being the nerve center of social movement, because it's where everybody comes to find out what's going on in other parts of the protest and other parts of the summit and the conferences. The walls are covered with a tremendous number of announcements and schedules. So, you know, any given wall, you can go and you can look at it and you'll find lists of the dozens or hundreds of different events that are going on and who's planning to cover them and coordinate what's going on. So the walls are completely covered with announcements and lists of what people are working on.
And what about what's going on outside? I saw lots of activity going on outside.
Well, the media center is right next door to the Convergence Center, where many activists are working on organizing the protest. So right outside, we have people building giant Mayan sculptures that will be able to be rolled through the streets as puppets. People are using the motif and working with indigenous activists here in the Yucatan Peninsula to connect the resistance to neoliberalism and globalization today with the fact that traditional cultures within this area have been exploited for 500 years. And so they're using the traditional motifs, the traditional ideas and Mayan gods to represent a new global resistance to neoliberalism and a hope for a new kind of humanity. One of the most important gods here is Huracan, which is the hurricane, and it brings destruction, but it also brings renewal. It brings the word. And so the newspaper is called The Voice of Huracan, which is bringing the voice of renewal and the voice of justice and the voice of truth to the streets of Cancun and to the delegates of the WTO.
Can you tell me a little bit about what kind of people go through an Indie Media Center?
The Indie Media Center here in Cancun is made up of people from all over the world. We've got people from the former Soviet republics. We've got people from across Latin America. We've got people from the United States. We've got people from Europe and Australia. And all these people are active both in social movements, but also in media making. So these are people who work on a community community newspaper or activist newspaper or magazine in their home communities. We have dozens of people from community radio stations across the Americas. We've got video activists who produce documentary films explaining and showing the aspects of globalization, and they're working together with Free Speech Television in the United States to produce a one-hour documentary about the protests and about the issues connected to the WTO, especially here in Cancun, which is an example of globalization at its most raw, because you have hundreds of thousands of people who live in extreme poverty here and work in the hotel industry. And then you have these fancy resorts and McDonald's and Burger King, which are completely out of place. You have all this wealth, which is supposed to trickle down to the people, but you still have really severe poverty here. So the wealth ends up going to the multinational corporations, which control the hotel industry and control the tourism industry. And that's what happens with all of globalization. You know, you say, oh, well, we need to move the factories. We need to open up agricultural subsidies so that third world farmers can make more money. But in the end, the people who make more money are the multinationals who control the trade. And it's a really conflicted situation, because, you know, when the WTO talks about helping the poor, they're not actually talking about helping the poor. They're talking about helping create an upper class within many third world countries. But they're not talking about actual development. They're talking about using the fact that these countries can be exploited for their low wages. This is really example in Cancun, which is where they chose to have their summit.
I've seen a lot of activity at Indie Media myself. What have you been doing over the last couple of days?
For the last couple of days, I've been working on helping set up the network. So we have a computer network with about 45 different computers set up and workstations, so we need to make sure everybody's online, that the streaming radio station works, that the video people can get access to the videos they need to do and coordinate it, that the print people have the monitors and the printers set up for them. And then I've been working with specifically radio here to coordinate getting pieces produced in English and Spanish to community radio stations so that they can air them. Especially here in Latin America, you have a huge network of community radio stations that are essentially offline. They reach people in their local communities, but they aren't using the internet. You know, there's none of this internet organizing stuff going on. But we can use within the media the internet to send the programs internationally. So I work with Indie Media Uruguay, and we're going to take our programs and we send them to activists in Uruguay who then burn them onto CDs. And then they can take the CD physically to the radio station. And this is a way of saying, well, you know, Indie Media and all these neat web projects are just about people who have access to the web, and they're just about people who have money. But you can use them as a distribution medium to get out elsewhere. So we take the articles, and then they get reprinted in local newspapers and active press. We take the radio programs, and we redistribute them as programs for many stations around the world to air.
Are there any particular upcoming projects for the WTO that you feel you can talk about?
Upcoming projects for the WTO. There's of course, covering the protests. We're going to have a live radio station that goes 24 hours a day here in Cancun. And there's a possibility that another group of activists, because we broadcast it live on the internet, are going to be picking up that stream independently and broadcasting it for the people of Cancun as well, and perhaps for the delegates if they want to listen to it. So it's a project of getting the content from these counter-conferences from the People's Forum and the Campesino Forum and the Fisherman's Forum and the International Forum on Globalization. There's a whole series of different forums which have very good content, and we're getting that out to the people by broadcasting it on the web, and then this other group may actually be picking it up and rebroadcasting it to the city. Student radio in Mexico City doesn't have to agree with the politics of Greenpeace, and they don't have to agree with the politics of AMARC, which is the Global Coalition of Community Radio Stations, but everybody can work together producing their own media and collaborating. And it's a real step forward in saying that We're going to work across organizational lines. We're going to work collaboratively and really develop almost sort of what the media multinationals do, where they have synchronicities. They cross brand stuff and they cross promote it. And we within social movements, as activists trying to make social change, have picked up on these ideas of cross promoting. So when you go to the indie media site, you see the projects of people who are working directly with indie media. But you also see links to all the other groups that are working on projects. It's a way of collaborating openly. You know, we don't collaborate with financial transactions and money being sent from, you know, one multinational to another. We collaborate on a grassroots scale to promote each other's work and to not get caught up too much in specifics of turf war. And that's an important step forward, I think, in social movements in terms of creating a communications network for everybody.
And what are you expecting over the next couple of days?
Boy, what are we expecting? I'm expecting to not get much sleep. We're going to be working pretty much 24 hours a day covering the counterforms, getting them up on the website, and then once the protests really get going, there's going to be a lot of coverage of the street protests and trying to cover what's happening both inside the forum and outside. And to be honest, I expect that there will probably be a fair amount of police violence, so that we'll be trying to document that to maintain police accountability as they try and stop the protests, as they try and to break the momentum of these protests. And they want to break the momentum of the protests because the protests in the street outside the forum are what embolden the delegates from third world countries inside the forum, inside the actual ministerial. And so we expect that we'll be not sleeping very much, working on producing every kind of media we can to spread awareness about the WTO and the issues of globalization and the struggle for a humane world.
Thank you very much, Evan.
Thank you very much.
I'm now speaking to Mary, who's at the Convergence Center in downtown Cancun. Mary, tell us a little bit about the Convergence Center.
Well, a bunch of activists from all over came about 2 weeks ago or so, and rented the space to be a center where activists who are working to stop the WTO, known as the OMC in Mexico, to converge, to meet, to make art, to network, to have to bond and come together. Hence, convergence.
And tell me a little bit about the place itself.
It's a wonderful three-story building in a wonderful, wonderful neighborhood in Cancun. Everything is very small scale, human scale. It isn't your shopping mall area, which unfortunately Cancun is full of. You know, there's a Walmart here, there's Burger King, there's all of these hideous things springing up like cancers all over Cancun. But this neighborhood is a very human scale, charming, full of flowers and painted buildings and just a lovely neighborhood of the people in which to be. And so we have this lovely space here, near a park. Sunday evening, we played a film in the park for the public, for the entire neighborhood, all gathered, hundreds of people, to watch this film in the park about the terrible things about globalization, corporate economic globalization, why it's bad for the people. It was all in Spanish and quite wonderful. And then the great anarchist marching band from Oregon, they're actually called the Infernal Noise Brigade, and I believe they're from Oregon. They could be from Washington. I'm not quite 100% sure, but they marched and just kept us so electrified during the peaceful protests of the WTO in Seattle in 1999. They were just wonderful, inspiring group. Well, they're down here, and they came out at this wonderful event for the public and for internationals and everyone who are converging here in Cancun to protest the WTO. Anyway, so that was Sunday night, and we had some actions yesterday that were just very upbeat and just playful and fun. A bunch of activists spelled out no WTO and no AOMC on the beach naked in the afternoon. And then in the evening, Food Not Bombs fed people in front of the Ritz-Carlton as just a food action. And the police were there, and they kind of confronted the people who were eating food outside and tried to get them to say that this was a protest. But the activists said, no, no, we're just eating. Here, come and join us. Eat some food. So it was a beautiful, whimsical action that had some symbolic impact, because here's this incredibly ostentatious hotel chain, Ritz-Carlton, and in front of it, we were giving out free food, and that sort of does the difference between the corporate world and the better world we're creating. And then what is happening here in the art space of the Convergence Center, you're probably wondering. Well, we have incredible artists, working, Cesar and Miguel, wonderful people working on great, great art. Kukulkan is the feathered serpent god of Maya mythology, and we have an incredible, incredible depiction of Kukulkan. And then another Maya god is Chalk, the god of rain. And just magnificent sculpture on wheels of chalk in an incredible pose. And I'm currently working on La Diosa de la Luna, the moon goddess. Itchel is her name, Maya moon goddess, who has two aspects. The aspect of Kali, the old crone goddess, who can be very malevolent, and when she doesn't like humankind, she wipes them out with water, you know, with blood. And then she also has the aspect of the beautiful, fertile goddess of creation, who gives birth to the new civilization to give them another chance. And you can see how appropriate she is for the actions that we planned this week, which is, you know, to do away with the old world order that's destroying the earth and exploiting everyone on it, and give birth to a new world, a new society, a human society that's both just and ecological. So those are some of the things that are going down here, plus beautiful banners are being painted, and we're preparing for the big campesino march tomorrow. The campesinos are here. Those are the small farmers from all over Mexico. And I'm staffing the Convergence Center right now while most people are actually out doing an action. This is the first day of more serious action. So,
can you tell me a little bit about that action, or do you have to be quiet for security reasons?
Well, the Mexican students got in last night very, very late after a very, very hard journey full of hassles from authorities and what have you, from Mexico City. They arrived late last night, and there were meetings this morning to talk about the shape of the action and what it would be. In the meantime, the people who were here planned a fallback action, because we didn't know when the students would arrive, and the students, we've been coordinating with them long distance in Mexico City and en route. The plan for the action and unfolded this morning, and I can't tell you the specifics of it since I was over here staffing the Convergence Center. But I'm sure part of it is a march, and there will be a component that goes to the barricades. The hotel zone is now barricaded from the public. The hotel zone is where the convention, the ministerial, the WTO ministerial is being held. So now they have barricaded it with movable fences, with metal fences with barbed wire at top. And so there's going to be, you know, possibly a confrontation there. And these are the components that often accompany a direct action in the street. So
it seems that you're going to be thinking about some quite serious issues of violence and confrontation. Have these issues been discussed at the Convergence Centre?
Oh gosh, yes. We're peaceful. I mean, as far as we're nonviolent, so we're not anticipating engaging in violence. That's not part of our thing. And the police have actually come out and said that they do not intend to engage in mass arrests. I mean, but who knows? I don't know how far you can trust that. But they have actually said that, which I think is, you know, to me is something. There hasn't been a huge police presence anywhere. We have not been hassled here at the Convergence Center as of yet. You know, if you follow these mass actions against the WTO and the other, the other institutions of globalization like the IMF, the World Bank, if you follow these summits, you know that often when we create a convergence space to host mass protests of these institutions, these very directed institutions, that the convergence space is often raided. And puppets are arrested and stolen, our beautiful giant puppets and what have you. So we have a fallback plan in case that happens, but there's been no indication that that will happen as of yet. There's been no police presence outside of our convergence center, which is very nice. And people of all kinds are walking in from everywhere, Mexico, the States, all over the world, Europe, Asia. I was over visiting the Campesinos yesterday for their beautiful opening ceremony, sort of an earth-based ritual, and now they're having what they call their foros, that is their forums, discussing what their political strategy should be, how they can gain more ground and become stronger and stop the terrible, the terrible forces at work that are privatizing land, stealing land from farmers and indigenous people, trying, you know, agribusiness, trying to take over the world's food market, take over countries' sovereignty in the area of food, and that's a huge issue. And of course, Greenpeace has been at the forefront of stopping GMOs and what have you, and done awesome work. So we commend you from here, and we are doing that work too, because of course GMOs and agribusiness are a huge issue on the table at this particular ministerial. And one of our messages to the delegates is simply, you know, delegates of the Global South, know your strength, walk out forever. You know, we accomplished that in 1999 at the WTO. We delayed the opening of the meetings, and we emboldened those delegates of the Global South to reject the Global North exploitation agenda. And if your viewers and readers or listeners have, or I don't know what medium you're writing for, maybe it's print, if they have been following what's been going on the global scene, they know that even the ministers of the Global South, who often, of the poorest countries, who aren't in the pay of the elite in those countries, are very, very disenchanted with the United States and the Global North policies at this point, and have been rejected. The idea of privatizing services, of opening up their countries to the international transnationals coming in and privatizing services, intellectual property rights, huge explosive issue. There's huge fear. The United States is already in a face-saving mode, saying, trying to downplay this ministerial because they're so afraid that it's going to fall flat on its face.
And we're working on it falling flat on its face and empowering those delegates and empowering the people and to reject this corporate agenda once and for all. And already they've scheduled new meetings that hadn't been scheduled before for December. Evidently, I was just hearing that that some new meetings have been hastily organized for December because they're so afraid, the Quad, the four nations that call the shots in the global north, led by the USA, are so afraid that nothing is going to be accomplished at this ministerial. And that's what we're hoping for. And what we're hoping for is that the global south just reject this. At least that's what I and my affinity group are hoping for. My affinity group is Amore Anarchia from the US.
I see. I've heard about the idea of affinity groups before. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Oh, well, it's sort of, how we've been organizing for a long, long time. It's small groups of people who have affinity, like-minded people who trust one another, who work in a small group, usually around seven people, but I've worked very effectively in affinity groups up to over 20 people. Just people with whom I've done actions, many, many actions, who hold the same points of unity and have the same values, and we work as a unit. And then affinity groups cluster into larger units that perform or stage or engage in bigger actions. For example, when we shut down the WTO, when we delayed the opening of those meetings in 1999, there were 10,000 of us working using this affinity group model in a directly democratic decision-making process. Easily 1,000 of us would gather together in a room. Each affinity group appoints a spokesperson. Members of the group can come too to tell that spokesperson what to say. Often the spoke is just simply empowered to make the decision for the group. Typically that spoke, the role of spoke, rotates within a group, but each group is autonomous. They can do, their decision making process is completely autonomous. There's no rules or regulations. In the spokes council, which is the spokesperson from each affinity group that's engaging in the decision-making process. At that spokes council, we make the decisions about what strategy we're going to use, how we're going to shut down the WTO, what is going to happen, who's going to do what, who's going to be in charge of communication, who's going to be a tactical team that can be empowered to make decisions if things change radically once we're in the street. We make all of this planning in a directly democratic way, meaning that each affinity group puts in their input. We come to consensus. People put out proposals. We make friendly amendments until everyone can agree or stand aside if they don't agree, but simply stand aside and allow it to go. No heavy, moral objections to what's going on. We make those decisions in what we call the Spokes Council. And that has been one of the most empowering things about the global justice and ecology movement, is this wonderful, directly democratic process that makes everyone feel they have a voice. I can't tell you how when I would jump up in front of this room of 1,000 people and put in my 2 cents and how empowering that was, and sometimes people rejected it and sometimes they accepted it, and and off we'd go, and it's a marvelously empowering process, and you realize how pathetic our bureaucratic so-called representative democracy is compared to a directly democratic decision-making process. And especially when our representatives are all bought by big transnational corporations. Of course, we feel totally disempowered in our culture. But that's why we say we're creating the better world that we want to see, because the process of the global justice and ecology movement is directly democratic, is about being ecological, and is about creating alternatives to the corporate shtick, that's being shoved down our throats.
So I really wanted to find out about the Eco-Village. Juniper, tell me about the Eco-Village.
The Eco-Village is a permaculture project that several people have put together. We've actually been planning this kind of village for actions at these global demonstrations for a couple of years, and I think here in Cancun it has come together in a huge and wonderful way. Basically, the idea is to demonstrate that there are alternatives to the way that corporate businesses provide us food, provide us water, and treat the waste that we generate, and that another world is possible, and we actually have some very simple and very beautiful technologies that allow us to manifest that kind of independence and food security that we need if we're going to overthrow these corporations. Because when we go into the streets and do this kind of work, I think there's this panic feeling of, okay, if McDonald's goes away or if the chain grocery stores go away, how do I provide my food? And so the Eco Village, how do I provide my water? So the Eco Village is the demonstration of what that would look like.
I see. And can you actually, for the people listening, can you actually describe what the Eco Village looks like?
Sure. It's located at a place called Casa de la Cultura. We have known for a couple of weeks now that this would be the camping space for campesinos who would be coming from around the Yucatan Peninsula, as well as the students who were coming from the university. And our plan was to demonstrate some very simple technologies for hand washing, for dishwashing, for showers, and then how to take the waste and run them through series of barrels that are filled with gravel and plants and organic material, so that what is ultimately released into the ground and into the garden areas is clean. It doesn't contaminate the groundwater here. The Yucatan Peninsula is a limestone rock, and there are no surface water streams on the peninsula because every drop of rain in this rainforest soaks immediately into the earth, and it's very, very important that it be clean. And we've demonstrated the technology for how to clean it. This is in contrast to the toilets in the Convergence Center, where we're not sure that they flush to a treatment plant. We know that there is a treatment plant in Cancun, but all over this peninsula, people are releasing the wastewater directly into the aquifers, and everybody under the age of 3, or what they call in the set of años, or the old ones, like over the age of 45, is literally at risk of death from dysentery, from untreated wastewater. And there are simple technologies that are available to provide them what they need. And the WTO and the corporations could care less. So we've brought a technology here. There are literally thousands of campesinos that are coming to the Eco Village.
What do you think the strongest point the Eco Village makes?
That our work is twofold. We have to protest the corporations, and we have to create and demonstrate food security, water security, and management of our waste.